Hello, you're listening to the wine podcast that does things differently. Yes, this is Wine Blast, where we're not afraid to have a laugh as well as a drink, and we're also not afraid to tackle big, scary-sounding subjects that go beyond the realms of wine and into areas like neuropsychopharmacology.
That's quite a mouthful.
It is.
Well done. So I'm not sure I could have said
Can't
that.
Can't do that with wine.
We do like a mouthful or two on the show, it's true, though, isn't it? But yeah, this show is one to get those little grey cells activated, your brain buzzing, because we're not only going to explain what neuropsychopharmacology is, at least I hope we are, we're also going to explore the bombshell notion of a world without hangovers, but where delicious, fun-filled drinks are still part of the picture. Could it happen? If so, how?
And to explore this fully, we're going to be putting our bodies on the line as experimental guinea pigs to test whether a new generation of drinks really can deliver what is being touted as a potential panacea. Hooch without the hurt.
Always ready to be a guinea pig for stuff. For hooch particularly. It's a tremendously exciting concept, all of this. One that's only just starting to emerge into the wider public consciousness, but does it work? Will it work? Can this be a new reality? And what might the implications for wine be in all of this? Stick with us to find out. We're also going to be hearing from the man on this subject. And this is just one of the things he has to say.
Alcohol is the ultimate social drug. Alcohol is a wonderful, wonderful tool for allowing relaxed socialization. But it comes at a price. We can improve on alcohol.
We can improve on alcohol. Big words from David Nutt, psychiatrist and professor of neuropsychopharmacology at Imperial College London, who has called alcohol old technology. Now, his field of study is the effects of drugs on the brain.
What neuropsychopharmacology means, as far as we're aware.
As far as we're aware. It's as much as we can manage. Our brains can take in. Professor Nutt is one of the preeminent global authorities in this area. But what he's also doing is trying to develop a new kind of drink, one that mimics the buzz of alcohol, but without the nasty side effects.
So what we're going to do in this episode is pick David's eminent brain about this fascinating topic, which, you know, may well herald the dawn of an entirely new era in drinks, a brave new booze world, if you will. We'll be trying some of his Sentia drinks, as well as other so-called functional drinks. Of course, from the perspective of wine lovers, putting our discerning taste buds into action. But where we wanted to start was with the humble hangover, didn't we?
Indeed, because I reckon pretty much every listener of this podcast will have, shall we say, a working acquaintance with hangovers. They are the curse of the enthusiastic drinker. Yep. Depending on how much you drink, they can range from relatively innocuous to utterly debilitating. According to estimates, get this, hangovers cost the UK economy between £6 and £20 billion in lost productivity in a year. And the US economy, something like $250 billion.
That's mind-boggling. Do love a good stat. Thank you.
Generally
speaking, though, you know, we do tend to accept that hangovers are sort of the inevitable result of overindulgence in a drink we find enjoyable. Not drinking is the first place, of course, to find the best remedy. There's also a growing range of non-alcoholic drinks out there to help you do just that. And we've done a couple of episodes on this subject, haven't we?
Absolutely.
Dry drinking back in Jan 2021.
Quite a while ago now.
But, you know, what if you hanker after the fun and the buzz, you know, as well as the unique tastes that alcoholic drinks can give?
So one option is to find a hangover hack, a remedy or cure, if you will. Now, this is something people have been seeking for centuries, if not millennia. Yeah. And among the various touted hangover cures are pickled sheep's eyes, ground bird's beaks, raw eggs, as in the famous prairie oyster, hair of the dog, sex, Coca-Cola, cold curry, sports drinks, pot noodle sandwiches, slushies, cold rice pudding, full English breakfast, and whipping yourself with a birch branch in a sauna.
Whipping yourself
whipping
with a birch
yourself.
Branch.
Whipping.
In a sauna.
I think that must be in Austria, I reckon.
I don't really know how to follow all of that. It's completely fried my brain. So I'm just gonna carry on. I'm just gonna say, you know, that this is a subject that's interested us, hasn't it? The hangover remedy, hangover hacks, you know, over the years, of course, given our day job can involve just a bit of wine. Uh-huh. We've dabbled in what? In starflower oil. Yeah. I mean, our list is pathetic compared to that. Yeah. Yeah. With starflower oil.
Nothing to do
milk
with whipping.
Thistle. That's rubbish.
Yeah.
There's no cold curry. Bird's beaks and stuff. But you know, we've never really got serious about it, have we? So, you know, we wanted to get an entirely more authoritative insight into this. So we read the book Hungover by Shaughnessy Bishop Stahl. I hope that's how one pronounces his name, which is one man's quest for a hangover cure. And he only went and found a remedy that worked.
For him, at least.
Mm.
But is quite exciting to read about, isn't it? Yeah. We don't want to give everything away with a massive spoiter because the book is worth the read. Essentially, he has as a cocktail of pills or supplements, I guess they are. Mm. They're all legal, all widely available. And they include things like vitamin B complex, magnesium, milk thistle, boswellia. And then the really key one, which is NAC or N-acetylcysteine. I think you pronounce it. Now, he takes these after drinking, but before sleep. And he says this does away with the most acute physical symptoms of a hangover, though not what he terms the more insidious effects like tiredness, anxiety, lethargy, that sort of thing.
It's quite something, though, isn't it? You know, this could really be a viable hangover hack. So, of course, we did have to try it out, didn't we?
We did.
Drum roll for suspense. The damp squib alert, it didn't really do much for us, did it?
No. But then I don't think, to be fair, we were drinking to the levels where it might have made a noticeable difference anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it was a couple of moderately big nights, but we're boringly sensible these days.
I mean,
you know, you tried it on a curry night, but just felt a bit oddly nauseous in the night, didn't you?
Yeah, it could have been the bargees, to be honest. But, you know,
either
way, it wasn't good in the middle of the night.
And then we both tried it after a night with friends and, it was a lot of pills to swallow. So, again, a bit odd.
Yeah. I mean, good to have the water, though, you know, because we got so many pills to get
water
down.
Water was good.
It took you a lot of water.
Water was good. And maybe that's the point. You just drink more water because of the pills. To be fair, we still felt a bit jaded the next day, not massively dissimilar to a normal morning after.
No. So we'll do some more testing on that front and we'll report back if there's anything new or sensational to report. Meantime, you know, short of whipping ourselves in a hot room, we're back to square one to drink or not to drink. Or is that indeed the question? Because nowadays, as we've mentioned, there's talk of a third way, both in terms of the new breed of functional drinks, but also a new synthetic alternative to alcohol. And this is where we bring in Professor David Nutt.
Yep. So as well as all his eminent credentials, David is a regular on TV and radio. He's a fellow podcaster. He has the Drug Science podcast, and he's written a book on this subject called Drink, the New Science of Alcohol and Your Health, which we'd certainly recommend. Mm. Now, in the book, he explains how, as a young doctor, he was struck by how widespread and serious the harms of alcohol he came across regularly were, and how embedded into Western culture alcohol is, you know, for social, historic, cultural and religious reasons. And he told us that seeking out altered states of consciousness is one of the defining features of humanity.
Now, it's important to sort of note that Professor Nutt isn't anti-alcohol per se.
No, he really isn't, no.
But what he is keen to be clear-eyed about the risks. And this led to him being sacked as the government's drugs czar or chief drugs advisor when he said that alcohol was more harmful overall than some illegal drugs like LSD, ecstasy and cannabis. So I wanted to start there and ask David just how harmful alcohol really is. And I also asked him to compare red wine and vodka.
Well, our analysis showed alcohol to be the most harmful drug overall, largely because it's at least three times as harmful to society as any other drug. That analysis was taken up by the European Department of Justice, who funded a study in Europe. 30 different European experts, same 20 drugs, came to the same conclusion. In Europe, alcohol is the most harmful drug. And then it's recently been replicated both in Australia and New Zealand by separate... So everywhere in the Western world where alcohol is widely used, it turns out to be the most harmful drug. But it's not the most harmful drug to the user. If you're going to use a drug, then what drug that's going to cause you most harm is almost certainly drugs like fentanyl or heroin or crack cocaine or crystal meth. But alcohol is relatively harmful. It's a sort of second rank harm to the user, but it's the wide use of alcohol in society that causes it to be the most harmful drug overall. Yes. And I often say this, that I don't think there's almost any family in Britain that hasn't been damaged by alcohol, either through people becoming dependent and getting health problems, or someone who's under the influence having harmed someone in that family.
Mm. I mean, if you could compare the risks or harms of drinking alcohol with another not risk-free but fun activity, you know, what might that be?
Horse riding. I say that with the tongue in the cheek, because my first big battle with the government was with Jackie Smith, who was determined that ecstasy should be kept as a Class A drug. And I argued that ecstasy was actually somewhat less harmful than alcohol, but also definitely less harmful than horse riding, particularly if you go jumping. So there are many things that people do which are not controlled that are more harmful than many of the drugs that are controlled.
Is there a, you know, when we talk about harms and risks versus potential positive effects, can we weigh up the difference in those kind of in those different ways of taking alcohol?
Yeah, it's very hard to find any positive health effects of vodka. I mean, there are definitely social benefits of drinking. I mean, one of the arguments that we've been making for a long time is, you know, I'm not trying to stop people getting the social benefits of alcohol. Alcohol is the ultimate social drug, except for, of course, our alternatives that we're making. but let's come back to that later. The issues with alcohol are the benefit-risk ratio. For most people, alcohol benefits are deemed by them to be greater than the health risks, although, you know, people's attitude are changing. But there's no question that if you are drinking a lot of alcohol, the health harms almost certainly outweigh the benefits. Mm. And those harms are determined by really three factors. One is, you know, how much alcohol you are drinking. The second is how fast you drink it. And the third is for how long you drink it. So, you know, what you should be trying to do is minimize all three of those. But then if we get back to your question, is drinking red wine better than drinking vodka? It's very likely to be better. These red wines, one of the very few forms of alcohol which you can make a case that there could be health benefits. It's hard to prove, but there's certainly substances, antioxidants in red wine, which helps the French live longer than the vodka-drinking Latvians. It's not easy. It's contaminated by the fact that they have a very different diets as well as different alcohol intakes. But yes, yeah, so the ultimate way to take alcohol is in the most expensive red wine you can possibly afford. If you can only afford one bottle a week, you're going to live very, it's going to have very little impact on your longevity. One thing's for sure, you're going to be really looking forward to that bottle every Saturday night if that's how you do when you drink.
Well, I'll make sure next time we get together, David, we'll have a bottle of that on the table between us. Just on a very brief personal tangent, you've also mentioned that alcohol is your favourite drug. Is that still true? And if so, what's your personal poison? What do you drink?
Oh, so yes. Yeah, so, I'll just share with you. So my current drinking behaviour is that during the week when I'm kind of mostly working, then I drink our alternative, the Centio alternative, and I keep my wine for the weekends. And I make a point of sticking to my the philosophy that, and recommendations in my book, which is that when I drink wine, I drink it with my wife, and we only ever open one bottle a night. We never open the second bottle. So I might drink a bottle of wine, you know, or maybe two bottles of wine over a long weekend.
Any insights into what particular favorite? Do you have any particular favorites? Wines, countries, regions?
It depends. I think a lot depends on what I'm eating as well. But I guess if pushed to, you know, to make a decision, I would, you know, I'd go for a nice, a rich red wine. I don't desperately mind between which ones they are. I don't have a sophisticated palate. I can share that with you, but I do enjoy it.
So tell us about the science of alcohol then a little bit briefly, if you can, how it works, the effects on our body.
So the good effects of alcohol, the reasons most of us drink, are to relax, to become more sociable, to get into convivial moods with our friends. That sociability effects of alcohol are mediated through a neurotransmitter system in the brain called the GABA system. And alcohol increases the effects of GABA. And GABA is the calming neurotransmitter. It relaxes us. It makes us more sociable, more engaged. The problem with alcohol is it does more than that. That's what it does to start with, the first drink or two. But then beyond that, it starts to engage with other neurotransmitters. It starts to release dopamine. And that's when people start getting loud and active and chatting and then maybe aggressive and then very irritable. It also releases endorphins, which is gives people a sense of pleasure, but also reduces their pain. So that's why the British Navy used to give their rum ration every day so people could put up with the pain of being on these little ships and getting their legs blown off. And then if you push the dose up again, you get into a state of blocking the glutamate system. And that's a system in the brain that keeps you awake. And when people block the alcohol blocks that, and there comes a level, with a level between about 150, 200 milligrams per cent, 2 to 3 times the drink driving limit. When you block glutamate, then you can't remember. And that's an alcoholic blackout. And the brain really doesn't like having its major awake transmitter blocked. So it compensates. It turns on more and more of these receptors to stop you effectively dying. Because if you actually carry on drinking, you anesthetize yourself and you die. So the brain compensates. The problem is the compensation lasts longer than the alcohol. So that's why you have hangovers. Your alcohol is clear from your body, but your brain is still protecting itself from too much alcohol. Then you have a hyper-excitable state. Lights are too bright. Noises are too loud. You feel like crap in the morning. And that's a hyperglutamatergic state. And that's just the brain. And there's also all the things it does to the body. But, I mean, do you want me to talk about those as well?
I suppose if you could very briefly summarize, I'm sure we're talking about things like dehydration, inflammation, but please.
Oh, well, yes, there are other elements to the hangover, which are due to things, as you pointed out, like dehydration and like the fact that alcohol and its main metabolite, acetaldehyde, they produce things called free radicals, which damage proteins and direct inflammation in the brain, but also they turn on inflammatory cells, which then attack your brain and attack other parts of your body. And that explains one of the other reasons, of course, most people know the main harms of alcohol, or most people realize, are actually due to damage to the liver. The liver has to mop up the alcohol. Pretty much every molecule of alcohol you drink goes through the liver, and the liver's trying to chew it up before it gets to your brain. But unfortunately, the alcohol chews up the liver as well. But it does other things. I mean, alcohol produces increased high blood pressure. Probably the first thing anyone should do if they get a diagnosis of high blood pressure is to reduce their drinking, because it's quite likely that that's contributing to it. And there's almost no organ system in the body that heavy alcohol consumption doesn't damage, even the skin.
So is there a way to minimize hangovers, therefore, or avoid them other than not drinking?
Oh, the best way to minimize a hangover is to make sure that you drink the most expensive drink you can possibly afford. And therefore, you drink less of it and stick to the one bottle, if you can, stick to the sort of one bottle between two people alike.
So, the best hangover hack is to drink the most expensive red wine you can afford. I'm not sure that's going to prove the most popular option.
No.
You know?
No.
I mean, I like the idea.
Fair enough. It's nice in theory, isn't it? And definitely one we wine lovers could get behind.
Definitely.
But how about his explanation of the effects of alcohol and a hangover? It was intriguing.
I totally agree. Yeah, that was fascinating. Mm. Especially just in terms of what goes on in the brain.
Yeah, particularly when it comes to the GABA system, which we're going to come back to. So coming up, we hear more from David Nutt about his alternatives to alcohol, plus we test a range of functional drinks to see if they really do work. To recap so far, hangovers hurt, though there are hacks. Either way, alcohol can be dangerous, despite it being the ultimate social drug.
And just thinking about hangovers and drunkenness, what was that about a rapid sober up chat?
Oh, yeah. So a couple of things here. I did see that in the press as well. It was a sort of recent study, wasn't it, looking at a liver hormone injection, which dramatically accelerates the sobering up process or something like that by stimulating brain cells. I'd actually discussed this with David Nutt, because he revealed during our chat that when he was doing his PhD studies, he discovered what he termed an antidote to alcohol intoxication, which was mind-blowing for me. At least it worked on rats. That was what he was studying at the time. It was a GABA antagonist called bicuculine, I think. So by blocking the GABA receptor, you block the effects of alcohol. So if you took it, it would stop you being drunk, for example, which is a similar sort of thing, which I found really interesting.
And why on earth didn't it catch up?
Yeah, I think he thought he was going to get the Nobel Prize for it, but he didn't, because he said it didn't actually stop the toxicity of alcohol, only the intoxicating effects. Plus, apparently, if you'd taken too much, there might have been side effects. So that would be potentially damaging all round. But something else did come out of this process. David started to think, if you can't stop people drinking or come up with a real antidote to cover all the systems affected by alcohol, but you do know that targeting the GABA system can be effective, what about scientifically developing an alternative to alcohol?
And the result was, is... Alcarel.
Exactly. So Alcarel is a novel molecule, a new molecule developed by David and his team, designed to target the GABA system and give you some of the pleasant effects of alcohol, but without the harm. So, you know, he really started to develop it after being sacked as the government drugs advisor. He showed me a bottle when we chatted. He was waving it around. Tempting, teasing me, because no one beyond the team has been allowed to try it yet, because it's got to go through food safety testing, which takes money and time. Mm. He's hoping it may be ready by 2026, 2027 in the US market and the UK shortly after. So, you know, what, 3-4 years?
Okay, so how does it work?
So the idea is to be like a flavourless spirit. You can mix with anything.
So you wouldn't drink it on its own.
But it has an effect, you know. So, exactly. You know, you could actually use it to backfill non-alcoholic beer or wine if you wanted to, which is a very interesting notion.
So to
give
it
an effect.
To add it to give something an effect.
Yeah. Although apparently in that sense, it won't replicate the mouthfeel of alcohol. You know, that viscosity, that richness. Mm. And that's actually where we're going to rejoin our chat. After I mentioned how alcohol doesn't just have a profound effect on our bodies, but also on the taste of wine, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a damn good drug, alcohol, isn't it? From the very, it works on the nose, it works on the taste buds. You know, that is the biggest challenge. In that, for most people who drink, that's nice, but it's not necessary. Most people are drinking for the effect in their brain rather. I mean,
but you've road tested Alcarel. What effects does Alcarel have, or what will it have on me if I drink it?
Well, it depends how much you've been drinking up to that point. But assuming you're not a heavy drinker and you haven't desensitized your brain receptors, then it'll have an effect like a glass of wine. It'll, after about 10, 15 minutes, you'll feel a little bit relaxed, a bit chilled. If you did it socially, a bit more sociable, a bit more convivial. Yeah.
Have you monitored or analyzed these effects beyond just sort of self-reporting the experience?
We're not allowed to do that at present. We have to, under the complex ethical framework in which people invent things, only inventors are allowed to self-test. If we want to give it to healthy volunteers in the public, we have to show it's safe. So that's where we are at present. We're in the process of raising the funding to make enough of the stuff to put it through safety testing. And then once it's been through safety testing, we can then give it to humans, called first into humans, and then we can exactly work out what the right dose is and get these scientific papers that prove it does what we think it does. Yes.
Yeah, any side effects you've noticed so far, you know, how safe is it, I guess?
So in our personal testing, we've not noticed any side effects. And the effect comes on after about 15 minutes. It lasts for about 30 minutes, and then it wears off over about another 15. So it's quite circumscribed. And it's a mellow effect. It's a mellow relaxation. But you're not sleepy. You don't fall asleep. You know, you just feel a bit chilled, which is what we were targeting.
And so, for example, can you drive? Could you drive after drinking Alcarel? And what about sort of pregnancy advice, that kind of thing?
Well, we advise people who are at any risk from any activity, either driving or being above, not to take any drug or not. So, you know, this is not an alternative. This is not a way of having fun and still being able to drive. No, because we don't know if it affects your driving. We haven't done the studies, but our recommendation until that point would be definitely don't take the risk.
And because of the ceiling effect, you can only get so, you know, drunk or affected, as it were.
That's right. That's the clever thing about it. It's however much you took, you won't get a greater effect, but you'll have a longer effect. And we're kind of comfortable about that because, you know, it means you'll be spending more on it.
And will it definitely not give you a hangover, you know, even as far as interfering with sleep or any other of the smaller, let's say, side effects of alcohol?
Well, we haven't specifically tested that. Well, we that's something we will do when we get to the point of putting it into what we call the first into humans, when we have enough of it ready to do proper human testing. Just to say, but in anticipation of these questions, we've also invested in a PhD student who's just finished a thesis on animal models of hangover. We know an awful lot about the nature of hangover from alcohol, and we'll be in a position when we're ready to try it in those models as well. So we'll probably approach the hangover from both the human and the preclinical rodent position. Our expectation is it won't do Hackles hangover in either.
Okay, so it's still early stages. Mm-hmm. But the idea is it will give you positive effects without the hangover. You know, one thing I did pick up on, though, was when he said it would have effects, and I quote, assuming you're not a heavy drinker and you haven't desensitized your brain receptors. Which I think I may have done.
Desensitized. Do you think I might have? Feeling we're all familiar with.
Maybe that's what I got remembering.
That was a really interesting point, wasn't it? It also says in the Sentia literature that regular alcohol drinkers may have a high tolerance to GABA release, which will moderate the Sentia experience. And that's quoting, I did mention that to David. Mm. You know, and it advises you to stop drinking alcohol for 2 to 3 weeks to reset your tolerance. I did quiz him more about that, and he said it would only be for heavy drinkers, i.e. those drinking more than 30 to 40 units a week. But anyway, hold that thought. We're going to come back to this point because it is a really, really relevant one. Yeah. I agree.
Now, we didn't have time to include it all here, but I know you did push David a bit on testing the effects of Alcarel.
Yes. So the invention team have tested it and found it has an enjoyable effect. Apparently it's fast acting, but also fast to disperse and with a ceiling effect. So if you drink lots, you won't get drunker or you won't get more silly or more affected. It will just last longer. But he did concede that the effects can be subjective. What he added was that they're doing EEG or brain activity tests for Sentia, which we're coming on to, at Exeter University to see if they can show changes in brain waves or in terms of boosting the GABA system in the frontal parts of the brain. So
you've mentioned Sentia there. Mm-hmm. Is this a good moment to bring David back in?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so while he's waiting to bring Alcarel to the market, David and his team developed the functional drinks brand Sentia. The first one to come out was Sentia Red, which is what David refers to in our interview. I asked him to tell us more about Sentia.
So Sentia is a botanical spirit. It's the first GABA spirit. So it's a collection of herbs, several of which are selected because we know that they produce effects in the brain, which are what we want, like relaxation, tranquility, but they do it through GABA. They're all herbs which have been in the food chain or accepted as safe foods for... Well, many of them have been used for centuries, but they're all essentially legitimate foodstuff. So they've all passed what would be considered as the food safety standards. And the blend is quite a sophisticated blend, because in addition to the herbs which do the business in the brain, or tickling up the GABA system, we've also got herbs which facilitate the uptake of those compounds into the body and into the brain. And then, of course, we've got other herbs which actually give it a flavor that so you will have a mouthful and you have quite a strong taste. And it's, as I don't know if you've tried it, but it's like quite a strong vermouth, which for some people is a bit too challenging, but obviously, you know, for those, it's very easy just to put it into any mixer you like. You know, I use tonic. When others use Pepsi or Coke or orange juice or apple juice or whatever.
Now, you talk about the effects. I would like to ask you about the effects of Sentia. You talk about sort of lightness, relaxation, sociability. Now, as far as you're using a mix of botanicals, and some of those are known as sort of adaptogens or adaptogenics, tell me a bit more about those substances and also the sort of scientific view of their effects. You know, have they been clinically trialed, for example?
Well, quite a few of the herbs that we use in this are also available as food supplements elsewhere in different combinations. This is a unique combination, and that's the special thing about it. Every herb that's in Sentia is available in herb shops. Some of them are available in food shops. Some of them are used in some countries in larger amounts as medicines.
But what about their effects?
Well, their effects are what we wanted them to be. That's 4 years of invention in here. We've been modifying these combinations till we get the effect. So the first couple of years was about finding the right combination to get the effect. And the effect is like a glass of wine. A small glass of wine varies, of course, with individuals. But in the same way as the impact of alcohol will vary if you've got a lot of tolerance to alcohol. This, the effect of Centia can vary, but most people say it gives them a light, buzzy, relaxed feeling, and they similar to alcohol. Not exactly the same, obviously. Alcohol has more effect often on people, flush a little bit. We don't get that particular experience of alcohol, which of course isn't due to alcohol itself. It's due to acetaldehyde. But mostly people find it does relax them. Sometimes they get a bit muscle relaxing. They feel that the jaw's relaxed a bit. And they just get a, you know, sort of slightly lightheaded, buzzy feeling.
But are there trials just sort of looking at the effects of sort of scientific evidence as to the effect of these adaptogens?
No, so I want to be very clear about this. We have done studies showing that people like it and it has an effect, which some people say is like alcohol. Generally, they find it pleasant, relaxing. So, you know, so we've got studies. I can show you the time course. Yeah, we've done those things. In terms of the biology, now, the adaptogenic aspects that you raise are fascinating. But proving something's an adaptogen is way harder than saying it's an adaptogen. In fact, if you know of any good experiments like we could do to show it's an adaptogen, then do share with me. Because in principle, yes, most of the ingredients in this are antioxidants, absolutely. But proving that we reduce oxidative stress in the body, that's close to impossible, even for powerful, even for medicines which soak up free radicals. I'm not sure there are studies that actually show that the human, there's a reduction in humans. And so there's conceptually, yes, proving it challenging. And that's why we're not really pushing that. We're just saying that these substances have been suggested to have adaptogenic properties, which for those, by the way, who don't understand what we're talking about, these are properties which help normalize and stabilize body function.
Thank you. And how do you feel about the wider field of functional drinks, you know, which seems to be growing really quite fast at the moment?
Oh, well, I'm really excited. There's the old saying, isn't there? You know, a rising tide floats all boats. But we're really keen that this market grows. We like the competition. We encourage it because it'll make us all smarter. And it also just spreads the word more. I mean, most people still don't know there is such a category as functional drinks. They think there's alcohol and there's non-alcohol. So we're a third category and we're trying to establish that. But one of the great reasons, just to emphasize, one of the reasons we invented Centia was to first proof of concept that you could actually have a GABA drink, which was a bit like alcohol. But also it was to start people understanding what the hell GABA is. I mean, who knows what GABA is? Everyone knows what dopamine is, you know, and a lot of people know what serotonin is, but most people never heard of GABA. But given the fact that there's more GABA receptors in your brain than all the dopamine and serotonin and noradrenaline receptors put together, it's really important that people understand that we're targeting a system in the brain which is not well known, but extraordinarily important.
Yeah, I do find GABA fascinating. And just to recap, so GABA is a system, in very simplistic terms, sort of which calms the brain, which reduces anxiety, and therefore probably lets you socialize more and be a bit more, sociable.
Absolutely. So GABA is it's the tranquilizing, it's the moderating neurotransmitter, and it's a remarkable amino acid. It's been present since the beginning of life. Single cell organisms are bacteria, small protozoa. They use GABA to communicate. Plants use GABA. I mean, when a plant is attacked by an insect, when an insect starts to eat a plant, it starts to release GABA to protect itself and to communicate with other parts of the plant that it's being attacked. So GABA is a communication signal that has been around for the several billion years that life's been around. In humans, my expertise is focusing on it in the brain, where it is that fundamental controlling neurotransmitter in the brain. But it has a massive effect in the nerves of the gut, on the cells of the gut. It also has a huge effect on the bugs in the gut, the microbiome. And one of the really interesting things is we're trying to explore is whether by enhancing GABA putting a drink like with GABA in it into your body will potentially have effects to improve the microbiome as well as have an effect in the brain.
So we can benefit our microbiome potentially by drinking good red wine, but we can also potentially benefit our microbiome by drinking drinks like this.
We've got a PhD student at University of Portsmouth. That study is funded by the Biochemistry and Biotechnology Research Council. That study will be starting later this year.
I can't wait. So is the future no alcohol at all, do you think? Or is it a mixture of alcohol with the more functional drinks?
Well, we're not anti-alcohol. You know, I'm in favour of socialisation. Alcohol is a wonderful, wonderful tool for allowing relaxed socialization. But it comes at a price. That price is potential health harms for people who drink too much. It also has a calorie cost. There's very few calories in Sentia. There's almost no calories in alcohol. So we can also reduce that aspect. So we can improve on alcohol, but we're not anti-alcohol. I think I will continue doing what I'm doing now. I will continue oscillating, alternating between alcohol when I can really relax and when I don't mind if my sleep's a bit disrupted on a Saturday night because I can lie in on a Sunday morning. But in the week, when I've got to get up and do interviews like this, I'll be sticking to my Sentia or my Arcarel.
Well, David Nutt, thank you very much indeed and cheers.
Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
So it's all about balance, mixing it up, as we've long maintained. Yeah. And talking of mixing things up, we have a whole load of drinks in front of us. All the colours of the rainbow, very different in appearance from our normal glasses of wine.
Mm. Yeah, so we enter Endgame, the acid test. You know, do these functional drinks actually function? You know, and when we're talking about functional drinks, we're talking about they have an effect, they have a buzz. Are they nice to drink? Mm. We've got them here. Obviously, we don't have Alcarel here. That might be illegal or unethical. I don't know what all these things, all the above.
You'd have to nick it, wouldn't you?
It's a lineup that includes some of the key players
here. Yeah, absolutely. So we've got Sentia Red here, which David referred to in the interview. If you try it neat, it's very deeply coloured, deep, deep dark red. It's very aromatic, slightly reminds me of being in an expensive spa. You know, and as with pretty much all these functional drinks, it's definitely better mixed. So we made a Sentia Sun, and that's with pink grapefruit juice, lime juice, passion fruit puree, and pink grapefruit soda. And it was the Double Dutch brand of pink grapefruit soda. Now, this is or was one of my favourites. You know, it looks cool. It's got a really intense red colour. It's got a kind of a tropical feel. It's tangy, but also quite rich, and probably the most complex flavor-wise of all of these mixed drinks.
It packs a punch, doesn't it? Both solo form and in the mixer, Sentia Red. We also got an exclusive taste of the brand new Sentia Black, which is just come out. There's also another Sentia coming too, but we're not supposed to mention that yet, so we're not allowed to. So anyway, the red is supposed to be for sort of chilled occasions. Black is intended to help create a sort of more lively feel. I'm getting lively already. In taste terms, this translates as a whole load of spicy heat packed in there, together with a sort of molasses character. But, you know, we've mixed this with a bit of my homemade kombucha, which has got a bit of ginger and pink grapefruit in there.
Had to give that a plug, didn't you?
Had to give it a plug. And then ginger beer. It's kind of it's like a whiskey lover's drink, isn't it, really? It's dark and it's spicy. I like this one, you know. You weren't so keen, were you?
Not really, no. But it is nice to have some of these drinks that are designed to pep you up and get you into the party spirit rather than just chill you out, which is what a lot of them seem to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree. It's all about getting the party started. That's what we really want, isn't it?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So what I did like, possibly I think my favourite of these, was a drink called Eddie Spirited. Now, this is a functional spirit developed by two guys involved in the Formula E racing car world. It contains cannabidiol or CBD, nootropics and adaptogens, which they say are designed to make you both more relaxed and more alert. Don't know quite how that works. apparently, each bottle has 420 milligrams of hydrosoluble CBD isolate, whatever that means. And the effects can be cumulative. So the more you drink, the more effect it has over time.
Over time, as in a long period of time, not just
a long period of time. Yeah, you sort of get used to it.
But we made that one with Mediterranean tonic, haven't we? And some ice and lemon and rosemary. It looks very cute. By the way, we will put all the recipes for these drinks in our show notes and the website if you want to recreate them.
But just going back to the Eddie, so this for me was a bit like a sort of a cloudy G&T. It's lemony and woody with a nice touch of bitterness. It's not sweet, which is good because quite a lot of them are. You get some nice richness in sort of the mid palate, but then a dry finish. It's very easy to make. It looks quite striking, as I've said, cloudy. It's sort of this milky white colour, if you stick the green rosemary and a bit of lemon zest, it looks pretty nice. And I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Looks like something you could be drinking on a spaceship in the alien films.
Anyway. I was thinking a beach in the Caribbean.
That's the difference between you and me. And then finally, we used the three spirit livener to make a livener Bellini. So by itself, livener is red, sort of cloudy, tastes of I don't know, berries, sort of sweet woody spice, doesn't it? It's a tiny bit medicinal. Now, the bottle promises a lively, euphoric feeling. Who wouldn't want that?
You know. Absolutely.
So to make the Bellini, we used passion fruit puree. Again, we just because we couldn't get peach fruit, we had passion fruit puree. And then topped it up with the Blurred Vines Spark, which is a kind of rosé sparkling wine substitute made with tea, fruit juice and botanicals. That's made by the same company. It also contains adaptogens in there. Now, this was tangy, sort of gently fizzy, had a bittersweet twang on the finish, I think. I'm just going to try it again. Touch of spice too on the finish. And that often works really nice, that touch of spice, because it also replicates the heat of alcohol.
Yeah.
Fairly sweet, I think.
Probably a bit too sweet for me,
maybe couldn't drink too much. But again, something a little bit different. And we've, you know, this range of drinks was actually really lovely. There was,
quite a range, as you say. But we have to come on to the $64 million question. Mm-hmm. What actual effect did these drinks have? For me...
Well, hang on, let's do it.
Drum roll. They had no noticeable effect whatsoever, I'm afraid. Sorry.
That's a bummer, isn't it? I would add...
It was a bit disappointing.
We tried all these drinks over a number of occasions, separately and together, absolutely maxing out in terms of quantities. Mm-hmm. It was by no means scientific, but you definitely didn't feel anything, did you?
I'm afraid I didn't.
I did push you.
Yeah, you did. You did, and I tried.
Now, I did feel something, but often it was just kind of a bit jittery initially, I think. I mean, that could have been from the pressure of getting all the mixer quantities right.
Actually, you know, yes. So you're being a mixologist for a night.
And then, you know, I would often get a sort of temporary feeling of being a bit spaced out, a bit sort of zen. But again, that could have just been the end of a long day. I don't know.
It's all
the power
say,
suggestion.
It?
It's really hard to say.
It's hard to
but
say.
But I definitely felt like often I had an effect when you.
Yeah. Wanted to. Anyway, perhaps more study is needed. In the meantime, I'd also add these drinks. They're not particularly cheap, are they? Eddie is £41 for 70 centilitres. Centaur is £30 for 50 centilitres. And Three Spirit is £25 for 50 centilitres, which is worth bearing in mind.
Yeah.
But one thing I did want to come back to be fair, was this idea that, which we touched on briefly, that perhaps if you do drink alcohol regularly, your brain might be slightly desensitized to these effects. We don't drink at the levels David was saying, but nevertheless, it could be making these drinks slightly less effective for us.
All that wine clogging up the system.
There's no room for anything else. But do you know what? To be really honest, I doubt we'll be taking 2 to 3 weeks off the booze to see if it does make a difference.
No, sorry. Sadly,
we're
not.
I don't think so.
But it's also worth adding that these drinks may well work for you.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they're worth trying, checking out.
If you do,
make sure you use our cocktail recipes. They are ace. They look cool and they're delicious. Or there are other drinks like this out there, like Kin or AF or Afterglow. You know, let us know how you get on. If you have massive effects, let us know, please. We'd love to hear about it. And of course, you know, we can repeat this whole experiment when Alcarel comes on the market in a few years' time. We'll certainly be keeping an open mind. We think this field is really exciting, and we'd just love to have some fun drinks as a viable alternative to alcohol. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, but we probably won't be giving up our wine anytime soon.
No. Well said. No. So, you know, I guess this isn't an end to hangovers, is it? At least not yet.
No. You know, there will certainly be trying the most expensive red hangover hack tactic, won't we?
Absolutely.
I'm doing that tonight.
David's justified that for it. Thanks, David.
Yeah. I love that as a starting point.
She doesn't need any encouragement. I'd add a point that Shaughnessy Bishop Stall makes at the end of his book, which is that, you know, having discovered his hangover antidote, it wasn't actually the nirvana he'd hoped for. If anything, it was the opposite. You know, he describes it as an alternate universe full of fears and problems, your life and liver constrained by scars and bars. You know, you think that having the hangover into it's going to be brilliant, but actually he said it wasn't.
It sounds a bit disconcerting, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. And he sort of concluded that hangovers do serve purpose, you know, in his words, to regulate the balance of human and booze. And that hangovers, you know, kind of force us out of our daily routines in a sort of bizarre form of mindfulness, if you like. He meets an older lady at the end of the book who says she loves hangovers because it gives the mind a sort of a brief vacation. It's what you have to deal with, and for now, there's nothing else.
Interesting. Mm. So rather than no more hangovers, it's maybe a different way of seeing hangovers, or maybe a bit of both. But for now, we must say thank you and goodbye. So thanks to Professor David Nutt, and also to you for listening. Until next time, cheers.